Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host. We have the full crew, Cody, Bo, and Tracy on the mic all together. How are you guys doing today?
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
Just fine.
All together, Tracy. You're supposed to go with the other guys, you know.
I wasn't fast enough.
Tracy had to think about it. She is an introvert. She had to process, you know, a little bit there. We got Karen sitting next to me, always a source of wisdom for me. And we got Matt behind the glass, making sure everything gets done and weighing in from time to time. Cody, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we took way too long to decide the topic, and I finally snuck this word in here again, but the title is Boring Meetings Suck.
Yes. We've done, over the course of the years, a number of podcasts about meetings, but this comes up again and again. And even in our own office, you know, this is one of those things that we put these ideas out, but even we fail to live up to them, and because it's just hard to remember. So I wrote a book called Death by Meeting a long time ago, and there were two basic points in that book. And the first one is that meetings have to be clear about what you're trying to get done. So we don't want to have meeting stew where we have one big meeting and we do everything in that. That's a big, big, big problem. That's why we say we should have four different kinds of meetings for a leadership team, blah, 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 really important. But the other major point in that book is that meetings being boring, just not compelling, not worth paying attention to, that itself is a massive problem. And that's what we want to talk about today. We want to talk about how to make sure that no meeting you have is mind-numbing and you lose people, because that's really on the leader. If we're allowing our meetings to be boring, we might as well just say that the business isn't that important. And that's what we want to talk about today, how to fix that problem.
Pat, what do you think it is that makes a meeting boring?
Well, the same thing I think that makes anything boring, which is you just don't care. There's no stakes. You don't understand why I should pay attention to this. You know, and you know, it's interesting. If you think about, we've all had jobs that could have been boring, that a manager made it interesting by said, hey, here's why this matters, or let's make a game out of this, or let's try to see if we can accomplish something. And you're like, wow, you just took something that could have been boring and made it interesting. Similarly, there's things in life that could be really interesting. And because people don't lean into that, they actually drain all the passion out of it. So I think it's like, get people's attention and make the stakes high. There needs to be something worth caring about there. And meetings are no different. But somehow, over the course of the decades, people have come to just accept the fact that meetings are probably going to be boring. And you know, gosh, I think about being in college or in school and some classes that teachers are just boring. And you just go, well, I guess math is boring. No, it's not. It's the teacher letting it be boring.
And the thing about meetings is they're on your calendar. You had to show up to that office or to that Zoom call and you fill the time. And so as a manager or a person leading the meeting, you're maybe not evaluating yourself based on, is this interesting? Because people had to come. You told them to come to the meeting. Whereas Pat, Cody, Tracy, we all are talking about movies. If a movie is boring, even if it's something like, I thought the movie Troy came out a long time ago. It's supposedly this big epic movie. It wasn't very good. It wasn't very compelling. But yet there's movies about things like Cody and I love the movie Whiplash, which came out several years ago. And it's about a drummer. And it's like, who would go watch a movie about a drummer? And it's fantastic. It's totally engaging. Somehow it sucks you into the stakes for this college drummer. So that's the end of what I have to say about that.
I love the point. I was literally this morning in the shower thinking about movies, because we were thinking about this. And so a lot of times we compare meetings to movies. And I thought, you know what the right category is for evaluating movies is watchability. Like hard not to, you can't stop once you start. And you think, man, that is so interesting. I want to do it again. And that is one of my like top three movies for that. And it's because it's never boring. And you're right. Troy is about a soldier in the desert taking on enemies and all this stuff. And this is a movie about a drummer. And yet it glues you to that. You care. It's dramatic right to the last. And at the end, you feel like that was so worth my time. I'm going to tell everybody else about this.
As we're having this conversation, I wonder how many people, and I was guilty of this before I worked at the table group too, is like, think you've all had experiences where you've ended a meeting and thought that meeting was boring, or you've ended a meeting and thought that actually was really kind of fun. And then didn't do the forensic analysis to figure out like what actually made that meeting interesting or why were we so engaged? And so that you kind of go through your career thinking, well, some meetings are good and some are bad. And when what you've done in the book Death by Meeting, Pat, is go, no, we've dissected the elements that make a meeting meaningful and matter. And it's sort of like you wouldn't do that with a movie. You wouldn't finish that movie and be like, well, I guess that was okay. I'll just indiscriminately pick the next one. You're trying to figure out like, what is it about that that I loved? And let me go find another movie that is like that. And that's what I think this conversation is about. It's like, if meetings are bad, you can contribute to them being better in significant ways.
Yeah, it would be like somebody saying, well, I guess movies about drummers are just really interesting, as though the person who directed it and wrote it didn't design it to be that way. And I guess people interested in ancient Greece and battle, I guess that's just not an interesting topic. It's like, no, it's not the topic. It's how what you do with it. And like Karen was saying before we started that I like to talk about like, you can have a meeting about going through your budget for next year, which sounds like just meeting hell. And it can be really fascinating and compelling. Similarly, you could have a meeting about, well, our company might go out of business. What are we going to do about that? And the stakes are so high, but you can actually destroy the stakes in that if you don't get to the heart of the matter in the right way.
I love that word stakes, Pat, because that is one of the ways that you describe that we talk about setting the drama, setting the stage for the meeting is if at the beginning of the meeting, you can't articulate and encapsulate what are the stakes if we have a bad meeting about this topic, then you might not even need to have the meeting. Be a hero, cancel that meeting. If there are no stakes, I think that's what happens often is you get in the room and you start to realize as you're going through agenda items like, oh, actually, none of this really matters. And then by the end, you think, well, that was a waste of time. But if you're going through the budgeting meeting and you're like, hey, you guys, we're going to have a 30% increase in our revenue and we don't have a plan for where to put those dollars. And if we don't have the right strategy in place for how we're going to grow with that extra cash, then you know, like those are stakes and figuring out like, how do we communicate that if we don't have a great meeting about this, that it'll cost us something?
Yes, exactly. The potential for pain and conflict is at the heart of this. I don't want to experience unnecessary pain. They say in sales, and I think every meeting is like a sale. I think every conversation is like a sale. I don't mean in like an inauthentic way. It's like, I am selling to you why this next 45 minutes or 2 hours is worth your time. And the way in sales, what they do is they raise your tension by what could go wrong, and then they provide a solution. You know, that's the kind of sales like, you know, you don't have insurance. You know what could happen if you don't have insurance? Like, oh no, that's terrible. And like, here's what we could do for you though. Don't worry, we have a solution for you. And in meetings, we need to say, here's what could go wrong, but we're going to figure this out today.
Yeah, great movies have, I love to use the word conflict back. Great movies have conflict. It's part of why we're paying attention. And I think a lot of us are fearful of conflict. In fact, that's in part of the five dysfunctions is it's one of the dysfunctions of a team is the fear of conflict is we default sometimes to playing it safe or getting through the meeting or avoiding the conflict that would really make it interesting. And I'm curious, what do you think is behind that? Why do we do that? Do we play it safe when we could really lean in?
I think it's fear. I think that it's one of those weird things. It's like they say no pain, no gain, but people still go, I'll still take no pain. It's like you think about it, like in your relationship with your spouse. It's like, I want my relationship with my wife to be better. Am I willing to enter into a difficult conversation in order to get there? And sometimes I'm like, well, if I enter into a difficult conversation, it might not work. I know I'll just settle for stasis for where it is today to not even take that risk. And so if our desire isn't for something better, but it's to avoid something worse, then all we're going to do is avoid that. And a lot of people think the definition of a good meeting is it started on time, it ended on time or early, and nobody got upset.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, hey, this movie, it will start on time. It's not very long, and you're not going to be bothered at all. You might even get a good nap in. So here we go. You know,
you make a good point. And I think the other thing that happens, Pat, is if you're leading a meeting or you're a part of a meeting, I think a lot of times people just don't give each other the feedback. Like everyone in the room thinks this meeting is bad. And it's sort of like, I love this movie analogy. If we go to the theater, the very first thing you do after you get out of the movie and you go to the bathroom is you congregate in the front of the theater with your friends and you discuss the movie. Was it good? Did you like it? Oh, I love that part. And nobody does that with meetings. And too often, I guess I would say, like, if you have a hunch that that meeting is bad, everybody else that's in the room that is listening to you also believes that it's bad and you should make active steps to change.
Yeah, that's so interesting because, but if the director were standing outside the movie theater, people would go, hey, great movie, way to go.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what people tell the priest or the pastor after a bad homily when they leave the church? Nice homily, nice sermon, yeah. Pastor. Yeah. And they do that. And I think that that's why it's the job of the pastor or the director of the movie or the head of a meeting to actually sit down and go, no. I want to know this, this, and this. And I'm demanding that you tell me how I can do this better. I remember when I was in San Francisco, when I lived there, gosh, 25 years ago, they used to have a lot of movies where the writer and the director would come and they would actually ask people afterward before they did all the edits. And I loved going to those movies because they'd stand up and say, who liked this character? Who liked this character? Was this too long? Was this too long? So you have to actually formally ask people. You can't just say, what'd you guys think of the meeting? They're going to be like, well, it's over. I feel pretty good right now. You know. So you have to mine for that conflict, for that information.
Just yesterday, Bo and I were on a call. We have a like pseudo team member who serves other clients and is a vendor of ours. And he said, we started a meeting where we were leading and he paused us while we were setting the stage for that meeting. And he said, you know, I am so bad at setting the stakes at meetings that I was with a client just last week. And I thought about calling one of you two and putting it on speakerphone and having, and just saying like, hey, you don't know this team and you don't necessarily know what we're talking about, but set the stage of why it's so important that we have a great meeting. And when you're exposed to that, and we're not always great at this, Pat. Like, we've had meetings where we have whiffed on setting the stakes and where we don't do this well all the time.
I've been pretty bad at it lately. And I realize, oh my gosh, I'm responsible for these meetings. I can't just go in there and go, hey, let's just sit around and talk for a while and then leave. I need to do a better job of this.
We're aware of it. And I think we've practiced the discipline of it. One thing that is like a unique thing that we get to experience is most people only get to have meetings in their own company or with their own team. And the nature of our business is we get to go help another company and you start to see the dramatic contrast between the ways people are running good and bad meetings. And I love what you say, Pat, is like, hey, if I could assess the health and potential success of another organization by observing only one thing, I'd want to watch how they behave in a meeting. That's how critical they are to everything we talk about. And people pretend or accept it as corporate penance. They're all going to be bad. And people need to do a better job making them better.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things, Cody, so people might be thinking, okay, so give me a tool. Give me a trick to do this. Here's the thing to do. The first 5 minutes of your meeting are the most important. The first 5 minutes of your meeting are most important. And in a movie, it's the hook, the first 10 pages of a screenplay or the 10 pages of a movie. So go in there and just go, how do I get people's attention? And oftentimes it's appealing to their sense, their healthy sense of fear. Like, what could go wrong if we don't actually pay attention? You know, it's like if I had a team and we were playing soccer and I was going on the field, I would say, see those guys over there? They want to kick your butt. They want to win. You don't want to leave here feeling bad. You don't want them to say, hey, we're much better than you are. You don't want to go home today and go, gosh, I didn't even try and that game's over. So let's do the best we can to make sure at the end of this game, we feel really good. I mean, that's not Newt Rockne, but it's a hell of a lot better than, okay, thanks for coming, guys. Kick the ball around. We're going to get started in 5 minutes, which is what we usually do.
I was at a back to school night this week and, you know, several people get up and in front of the microphone and the energy of the room, as soon as they turned the music off, well, I turned the music off, then the energy of the room just started going down, down, down. It was wah, 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 wah. And then one of the teachers went up and you could tell she put her notes away and she just started asking questions. And the room started being engaged and paying attention because the conversation was, you know, multi-directional. And I've seen that happen in meetings where we'll even have colleagues who put a question in the meeting subject, you know, in Outlook or in their calendar, to be able to say, this is what I'm curious about. This is what I want to lean into. And it sparks my interest rather than weekly tactical or, you know, here, we're going to get together, Bo and Cody meeting. It's like, we're going to wrestle this idea to the ground, helps prime the pump for me even showing up to the meeting.
Yeah. What's the plot?
Yeah.
And you know, Pat, I love these like, hey, what are some quick wins? How do we make them better? I'd love your set the stakes, appeal to the fear. What could go wrong? The other thing that I feel like is a really easy win is most meetings that are bad have a preset agenda. They say, oh, we're going to give 10 minutes to the new, you know, benefits pack program, or, and we're going to give 5 minutes to solving this problem. And some of what we do very naturally, because as a result of the book, is not setting an agenda in advance. Cause what tends to happen is you just think, well, actually I disagree with that point, but we have four other agenda items here and we only have 20 minutes left. So I'll just be quiet, you know? So even if you can't have the discipline of not bringing an agenda, at least have the discipline of getting in the room and saying, hey, we ordered these, but what is the most important thing? What should we talk about first and give the majority of our time to, rather than just going in order?
Yeah. You know what makes a meeting better, should be better than a movie, is that it's interactive, right? I mean, the director and the writer have to assume that they're trying to figure out what would people like. And once it starts, I mean, once they do the movie, you have no ability to influence it. But in a meeting, you can literally start and go, okay, I'm the director and the writer of this meeting. What would make this interesting for you? Here's what's going on. Now, what would you like to know? And what would you like to talk about? And what would be the most compelling thing for you to do? Suddenly people are like designing the movie together, and that completely gets them involved. And we actually get to do that in our meetings. But if we come and go, here's the agenda, I've already determined it, here's how it's going to go, people are just like, okay, I can check out. I can get some red vines and sit in the corner. And Tracy.
You know, I love this topic. The one thing I would imagine is there's probably a lot of leaders listening to this, thinking to themselves, I'm not naturally gifted at this. I have a different style. I'm not a natural salesperson. I don't know how to set the context. What is your advice to those leaders?
Yeah, I would say go into the meeting and say that. Go, hey, I think my meetings are boring. And I think that there's real reasons. The stakes are actually high. And I know this. This is not my thing. I need your help. Here's what's going on in the company right now. Here's why we're having this meeting. Can you guys help me understand how we can have a really compelling conversation? What would get you out of your seat and get you leaning forward? Suddenly, like I say, when you're on the field blocking, you're not complaining about the play calling. But if you're on the sidelines and you have no play in part in it, it's a lot easier to complain. So I say invest in them, or invest them in designing the meeting and making it interesting.
A tool I've learned from you all is this forced ridiculous answer, where we'll be in a meeting and it's not usually for lack of drama in our meetings that we're doing it, but I think it does create conflict. If you say, we're going to have everybody go around and say, what's the most important thing we talk about? Or we're going to have everybody go around and say, how many of these products do we think we'll sell in the first month? And it forces some conflict, because you're going to then see where you have differences of opinion or different guesses as to what's going to happen. It allows you to do some digging in, and everybody's participated, right? And you've seen where there's conflict that it's emerged naturally.
Yeah. I think that was probably really interesting what you just said, Bo, but I was just thinking about something else based on what Tracy said. So could you say that again? I'm sure it was so good that people want to hear it again. I want to.
I don't think they want to hear it again, but how much like a meeting is this? So I'll just say it again. One of the things that I've learned from you all is this forced, ridiculous answer that you will do in meetings. Tell us about what you do.
And I do think it gets people invested. Like, we'll just like go, hey, we have a decision to make here. And everybody's like, well, how should we make it? It's like, I know, you're all going to make it. Everybody write down your answer. And people are like, well, I don't know. I've never done this before. I know, just guess. We're not going to go with that. We're going to see where everybody's at. And that's when people get a little nervous and a little anxious in a good way, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to guess. And then we go around the room and we hear what people have to say. And it's so fascinating. First of all, the answers are usually closer than we think. And people are like, I'm not dumb at all. I guess I understood that. And everybody wants to hear what everybody else has to say. So it's like stopping a movie in the middle of a movie and going, hey, everybody, guess what's going to happen next? Or what should this character do now? Everybody be like, oh, that would be really interesting.
It's even less important about the number, but it actually teases out why, or whatever the guess was, it's the what's behind that. So they start to say like, oh, I was thinking this. And that actually is a way that we sort of unintentionally mine for conflict, is by soliciting people into those conversations and getting the why behind their guess.
Exactly. Now I've forgotten the thing that made me not listen to Bo based on what Tracy said. This is a mess. I'm sure it'll come back. Of course, all of this, Karen has reminded me, all of this is based on trust. You go into a meeting, and if there's not trust, people aren't going to be willing to do it. They're going to be like, ooh, should I say that? What's the cost going to be? If there is trust, people are going to let go and do their thing. You know, one thing we did talk about before is, if anything, meetings, there's so much still going on Zoom, and it is just that much harder in a two-dimensional setting versus a three-dimensional setting to make this work. So that means this is even more important. Make that first 5 minutes really compelling. Really raise the stakes. Tell people what could go wrong. Ask people more questions. Because if we think it's boring to be in a meeting that doesn't have any stakes, imagine when you're on a computer and you can be, you know, setting up your phone right next to the thing. And so you can be looking at other things. It's a lot easier to do that. It'd be like having headphones in at a movie and listening to a podcast. You know, it's a lot easier to be bored.
Pat, can I do like a grumpy old man on a porch segment real fast, just about the Zoom meeting, which is I'm only 30, I'm mid 30s, but if people are not turning on their cameras to have a Zoom meeting, I've been on the client side of that where I'm paying a vendor and the person on the other side is not turning on their camera. I've been in team meetings where people try to get away without turning on their camera. There is so much that is communicated in body language that we are missing by that. If we're going to not be in the room and argue, the least you can do is communicate visually in addition to vocally in a meeting. Because there's so much in the mining for conflict thing. I think we are so it's hard enough to do on its own. And it's even harder to do when I can't see what I'm saying and how your body language is. So sometimes I'm like, Tracy, the way your face looks makes it feel like you're disagreeing. Just say it out loud. And when we're losing that element of it, I feel like meetings just get worse and worse and worse.
So I had sons of all ages. All my sons had Zoom classes at different stages, you know, do it during COVID and everything. And they learned all these amazing tricks, like set up the, and I fault the teachers for not saying, don't do that. Turn on the lights, turn the camera around. I want to see your face. They would literally make themselves look like a silhouette. So the teacher couldn't see their eyes because they would be in front of a window and they would literally play video games and the teacher couldn't see what they were looking at. Or my son, Michael, I'm going to out Michael. He would literally put a hat and it like at the top of the screen or at the bottom of the screen. So it looked like it was just angled poorly and that it looked like he was there and then he wouldn't even listen. And you know, and I think about that, it's like, shame on you, Michael. It's like, no, it was so boring that he just said, there's no cost to doing that. By the way, I remembered what I was going to say before, and I think it's great. Jim Collins, the author of Good to Great, and we know Jim a little bit, very nice guy and really good thinker and writer. He was a professor in business school, and he didn't have a PhD, which probably irked a lot of the other professors, but he was always rated the number one professor, right? And he'd go into the faculty lounge, he'd say, and the professors would go, my students are bored. They don't even care. They sit in the back of the class and they drink their coffee and they don't ask questions. And these kids just aren't very motivated. And Jim Collins would say, my students aren't like that at all. They're totally engaged. Maybe it's not them. Maybe it's you. Wow, and so amazing. It's so easy to go to a meeting and go, gosh, I'm having this meeting, but none of these people care. And then that moment of courage of confronting ourselves, we have to go, it's actually me. If I'm leading this meeting, it's actually me. And that's a really important thing to do.
You know, making another connection between meetings and movies, you could vehemently disagree, and that would be interesting, actually, if you did, is great movies have great characters. And I'm thinking about when I've been part of larger institutions where there's tons of red tape. And you know what? People show up to meetings and there's all these unwritten rules. And your personality, who you are, your working geniuses, your temperament is not allowed to come through. And I think great meetings have interesting people, have interesting characters. I love being in meetings with Cody when he is more of who he is, not less of who he is. And I love being in meetings with Tracy. And they're not trying to be people other than who they are. And they're both very, very interesting. And it leads to better meetings. But so often, I feel like we're in meetings and people are playing it safe. Don't let your temperament or personality shine through. And I'm like, no, be more of who you are. Tracy,
totally agree.
Yeah. And I think that's when there's a lack of trust that happens. Mm-hmm. So I think I think that's what it's about. That's at the heart of that.
Yes. And I think the other thing is, I agree with you. It's like the leader of a meeting needs to be like a conductor where they're drawing people out to like pointing at somebody and saying, now it's your turn. I want to hear what you have to say. They're asking questions. Karen was saying like inquiry and advocacy happen in meetings, but the leader has to be asking, what do you think? You don't look like you haven't said anything today. What's going on with you? You know, Do you really agree with Tracy? What happens if we do it that way? The leader has to be welcoming that and conducting it, orchestrating it authentically. And if there's not trust, they're not going to want to play. But if there is trust, letting them sit there is not a good idea. So meetings, there's never excuse for a meeting being boring. And if you've tried everything and it's still boring, then that's almost always an indication there's no need for the meeting. And then you can be the hero of that movie and end it after 20 minutes and say, it's actually just a short story.
Before the unpaid ad, I actually want to do there's nothing paid about this. We are doing an event, a public live webinar about meetings and at the Whiteboard event in November. So we don't actually even have a registration page for this but we'll announce it on this podcast when we do. But this content, it's not just about the stakes and the drama. We're going to talk about those four types of meetings, the way Working Genius overlays into how to have better, more effective meetings. So if this topic resonates with you, keep an eye out on our email list or on the podcast for when that registration page is live. We'd love to have people join us.
And if you're a leader who's not good at this, bring your people with you to listen to that, because they're going to help in a good way hold you accountable for doing that well. And if you're an employee and your manager's not good at that, bring him or her along so they can learn it. And if you're a consultant, bring your clients along so they can learn from this too, because it's one thing to hear it and see it played out. We're going to talk about the whole thing. And I promise you, we won't make it boring, because if we do, nobody should believe anything we say. But what is the unpaid ad?
So I have this reputation as being kind of a nerd because I talk about school supplies and I like celery and I know who our presidents were, okay? And I guess those things make me a nerd. So today I'm just going to become more of who I am and say today's podcast is sponsored by the Oxford comma.
No. Tracy, no. Can we remove him from this role of unpaid advertiser?
No, Oxford comma is fantastic.
On the last podcast, he supported school supplies and all of his kids are homeschooled. I think it was that a drumming up from his wife, the teacher, wanted to... This is a real segment of the podcast, Bo.
And Bo and his family make their own pencils and paper at home from trees and lead. So they don't go to get school supplies. It's totally inauthentic. So wait, I got to say, the Oxford comma, is that different from any other comma?
Yeah, it's the pretentious one.
Are you talking about the cereal comma?
What I don't know comma what the cereal comma is. About?
I don't know what the heck this is.
Okay, this is fantastic. There's going to be people who are siding with me about this. If you're having a list of, there will be. If there's three things you're saying, we're going to go and we're going to pick up pencils, binders, and erasers. The Oxford comma is the comma before the word and. Lions, tigers, comma, and bears. That comma is the Oxford comma.
Correct.
Oh, just that one.
Wow. How many listeners do you think this cost us?
I don't like that comma.
How many listeners do you think this cost us, Bo? Like, people are going to unsubscribe after this. So do you think it's like 100, 200?
No, I think our ratings are going through the roof.
Did you guys ever read, what was that book about the Eats, Shoots, and Leaves? That's what it's called. What a brilliant title.
A great book.
It's all about punctuation. And it says, if you put the comment, or what is the other one about eating your grandma?
I'm on the podcast and I'm going to hang up, okay?
See, I thought that Tracy sort of hates the Oxford comma. And so I was like, oh, we're...
The less pretentious way to refer to that comma is the serial comma. I actually like the serial comma. I'm on board.
Well, let's go. Serial comma.
Well, Tracy's my editor, so this is going to be a blood fest right here because I don't like that comma.
You use the comma in all of your books, Pat. I hate to tell you.
Well, they edit that to put those in.
Matt, if I leave, will it interrupt the recording or no?
Okay, this is very controversial, whether the Oxford comma matters or whether we like it or not. I think Bo is going to be on probation for like 2 months of not being able to come up with one of these things. But Bo, good for you for putting it out there. And yes, you have confirmed your status as somewhat, we all are, of a dork. But we love your dorkiness. And we love our listeners for listening. Please do vote for whether you like the Oxford comma or not. We have to get to the bottom of this. We just do. Conflict is important. All right. We will talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.